The Lux Ops Pier podcast with Scott Bowser is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. That's right. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play the pick'em game, which you pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat line in this week's total or for the games, whatever. Right now it's basketball. So you can win up to 100 times your money in a single night, pick between 2 and 5 players to build a pick'em entry. You can also make a rivals picks where you put 2 players against each other. It's a lot of fun. I will be giving out some picks for this later in the show. So, but me, you know, maybe who do I like today in college basketball later? Oh, I really like Charlotte. So maybe let's build something around the Charlotte guards with their 3-pointers because they shoot the ball well. Anyway, use promo code LSH to get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick special. That's right. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with promo code LSH. Get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 or over and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit ncpgambling.org. Yes, it's March. That means I got the John Tesh round ball rock. It's time to get jacked. I'm getting jacked. Jacked up for March Madness. And I know this week's guest is jacked up for March Madness, too. Everybody, my good friend, Eric Adelstein. What's up, buddy?
My brother. How you doing?
Good, man. Good, good, good. Dude, I'm just pumped, man. Like, I don't know. Like, as you know, I've been dealing with my dental problems. I've mentioned it on the show and stuff. And I got a benefit coming up for Sports Gambling Podcast Network that we're going to be raising some money. So, yeah, I'll be promoting that soon here on this show. But I think we're going to be doing that later in the month.
Let me know when, man. I'm in.
Yeah.
Let's get your teeth dialed in, bro.
Bro, so here's what I'm doing for it. I'm actually doing a 24-hour telethon where I'm going to do a 24-hour straight stream of my digital horse race game, Photo Finish Live, where I'm going to be betting on horses and entering races and picking races for 24 hours straight on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed. So,
dude, how cool.
You know what's funny is, like, I haven't lost a pick making picks in that game yet. Like, I mean, my horses that I own have lost races, but when I bet on other races, I haven't lost anything yet because I've kind of dialed in the combination of I know how the video game works and I know how real life horse gambling works. And for me, dude, it's so easy on these things because the pick pools are so small. I can see exactly who's loading on which horse at which time.
Oh, wow.
And it drives the odds different ways. And like last night, I texted my buddy in Australia, I messaged him, who was also into the game. And I'm like, hey, dude, this horse right now is going to win. He puts in on it. And then right at the last second, this guy puts a huge bet on it, driving the price from like 5-1 down to 2-1. And I was like, you know, and it won. And I'm like, if this dick wouldn't have done this, we would have cashed in cashed.
Wow.
But I got, yeah, I'm so like, here's the thing. When I do these streams and this stuff, cause I'm going to be doing a weekly stream for the big races in this for the podcast network. I got to make a promise. You guys got to promise me if you're going to be following my picks and taking the free money I'm going to be giving out on these, you have to bet small. If we all bet small, we can get bigger odds. But if we all start betting big, we're going to lower our odds down to nothing. So we got to like just kind of slowly bleed it over time.
And we know your crew is going to follow that, but it just takes one greedy fuck in this life, as we've seen. God. Or, you know, thousands of greedy
fucks. Hey, if it's just want to be a rogue greedy fuck, but it's like, hey, it's better to be greedy, lower your risk, and get a better reward. I don't know.
You know what I always think of with this, man? My grandfather told me the greatest story about greed. Where it was like his first day in school, and the older kids came up and very sweet, like, hey, do you want to play a game called Grab? And he's like, sure. Yeah, that sounds great. So they take this towel off of a table, and there's everything that a kid in 1930 would want. You know, a pocket knife, a compass, probably some kind of baseball card.
Probably a rifle, like, dude. Back then, they just gave kids guns like nothing.
Dude, as they should, man. Bring it back.
It's true.
But and they're like, okay, the game's called Grab. So, and it was like, you know, my grandfather and 4 of his friends. So they're like, okay, figure out what you want to grab. Welcome to school. This is what we do. And then when you turn around, I want you to turn around. We're going to cover it. And then when we say grab on 3, grab. So one, they turn around, one, two, three, grab. At which point, four kids in Medford, Oregon, put their hands in a pile of dog shit. A massive amount of dog shit. And that's always what I think about when people get greedy. I'm like, you're
going to get your hands covered in grab. You're going to get your hands.
You can't play grab because you're going to end up with hands full of dog shit.
That's so true.
Isn't that great?
It is great. So I was just telling you right before we started recording, I had a Curb Your Enthusiasm moment.
I need it. I've been having so many of them lately, man, but manners are just out the window.
And so, okay, there might have been a language barrier on this one, but for myself, I'll be quite upfront with that right now, but let me cue the music here because, all right. So I had to go this morning, smog my car, and do the DMV. Now, here's the thing. There's a smog service place. This is a little, like parking lot, like, you know, the old photo booths. Where it's just a little thing out in the island in the parking lot, kind of drive-up service, little mini one. But there's one owned by the same company on both sides of the street on Decatur Boulevard here by my house. So I go there, and I see there's like three cars ahead of me in line. I'm like, oh, shit. And I got there like 10, 15 minutes early. I was like, oh, I thought I was going to beat the crowd this morning before they open. And I look at the other side. No one's there. So I go over there. I get in line. Bam, I got it. I'm first one in there. Guy even opens up 5 minutes early, gets me. I'm feeling this is amazing. This doesn't get better than this. And he goes, "Hey, I don't have the DMV kiosk on this side because here in Nevada, you have the kiosk where you can just kind of. I don't have to go to DMV. I can just walk up to the machine. There's one at Albertsons on Rainbow Boulevard. There's one here at the whatchamacallit." Yeah, at that. But there's only one at the one machine. Well, across the street from the one I was at was also like there's a tint shop, a insurance place, a little strip mall. Or it's just a tint shop and insurance place. And in the middle, it's a specifically DMV services building. So I was like, all right. I go over to the one because I'm like, these guys just – I go back to the one I originally went to because I figure I'll use their kiosk. This will be easier. I go up to the machine. And by the way, it's like 40, 50 mile an hour winds here right now. So I got this this thing I printed out, and it's flapping in the wind as I'm trying to get it scanned to do my registration. I didn't realize at the time I could have just done my license plate and the last four digits of my VIN if I would have selected a different option at the beginning, and I wouldn't have had to dealt with any of this. But then I wouldn't have the bit for the show.
Yeah.
So then what happens is I go over I couldn't get it to work. I'm like, fuck it. I'll just go over to this place across the street. Oh, I was trying to get it to work on my phone too. And it wasn't reading the thing. I had my case on. Sometimes it reflects. I was like, this is rough right now. I'll just go over to that DMV service place. There's a guy standing out front like he works there. Okay. Very much like he works there. And not only does he looks like the type of dipshit loser that has major, I work at a fucking strip mall energy. And I've worked in strip malls before, so I can say this about these dipshit losers, okay? He's standing there out front, and it looks like, it's like he's standing there like ready to greet. There's a fucking neon sign that says open. There, I'm like, oh, perfect. I drive up, no one around. I'm like, oh, this is great. I go, it's locked. And I look at the guy, he's standing right there. I go, are you guys open? He goes, yeah, open. And I go, well, I try the door again. I go, because I only tried the one side of the door. I was like, oh, well, maybe that side, the left side's locked. Maybe I just need to try the right handle.
Sure.
I try the right handle. And it's locked. I go, well, it's clearly locked here. Are you open or not? He goes, yeah, no, open. And I'm just like, oh, my God. And so I sit there, and I thought maybe the tint place, because I couldn't tell because the windows were very tinted in this whole strip mall, like, well, maybe it's connected. I see someone go in the door to the next door. I'm like, well, maybe it's connected. Maybe that's why these doors are locked because I got to go in on that side. So I go in over there. I wait in line. And the guy who actually really reminded me and looked kind of like a good friend of the show, CJ Sullivan, was like, no, they're open, but they run out and do little deliveries and stuff all the time. So they're probably just gone right now. They'll be back. I mean, it is Saturday morning, 8 a.m., like first thing. So I stand out there and wait for a while as I see this dipshit, like, I think he works for her, like, Enterprise Rent-A-Car or something, and he was, like, trying to hustle these, like, rental cars for these guys that were picking up their cars from the tent shop. I couldn't quite figure it out, but I felt like he was fucking with, and then like I was like, I mean, I don't mean to be like that, and I didn't want to, I mean, I didn't take anything out on the tent shop guy, but I'm kind of like, I don't mean to be an asshole here kind of thing, but like, this guy's out here kind of fucking my whole thing up, because like, he's telling me it's open, it's not open, all this stuff, and he just looked at me and like shook his head. I'm like, okay, he's dealt with this asshole. I don't want to have to push this any further. Then I go there and wait for like another 20 minutes or so, and the wind's just picking up. And I'm finally like, oh, fuck it, I'll wait in my car. And then it just dawned on me. I was like, you know what? Take the case off my phone, crank up the brightness. Maybe cup your hands around it. Maybe you can get this thing to scan. And then I go back, and that's when I realized there was this other option. And that's right. I could have just entered my license plate and the last four digits of my VIN the entire time, which is handily right there on the printout that I got. So there shouldn't have been an issue. And yeah.
You're taking accountability, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's what Larry David does, too, on the show. And we got to say, just a quick in memoriam, Richard Lewis, what a loss. Man. What a fucking legend. Him and LD's scenes on there were some of just the greatest.
Beautiful. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, but Richard Lewis was in a film called Game Day, 1999, where he plays a college ball. He basically plays Rick Pitino.
And it's what?
And it's like a guy who washed up.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's like he washed up at like Kentucky, and now he's at some like upstate New York.
What?
I swear to God, it's basically like the Rick Pitino story, but in 99, like where he went from like Kentucky to like this like Iona type school up in upstate New York. But the whole thing is that they're in the national championship game, and this year they're doing it on campus at the small school. And it's like this whole thing of he's this alcoholic loser. It's great. It's a
no. It's like a dark comedy. He was a diehard Hoops fan. He's in one of those great NBA promos in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
The whole thing was revolving around him. Like, he was just a legend. Like, it's one of those you'd go to Greenblatt's Deli here, and he'd be eating there alone. And you just feel a little bit cooler because you were in the same space as Richard Lewis.
Dude.
Because he's also, I'm sure you're like me, of like, running home after school, watching Comedy Central, stand-up, and, you know, Richard Lewis was just one of the titans.
Oh, dude. I used to love, when I grew up, I always watched the HBO specials, like after my parents went to bed at night and stuff. And, his were always some of my favorites. But, and I don't know, everybody was sharing clips from Men in Tights. So I'm like, you guys are sleeping on Game Day, because, like, he gives, like, a really good dramatic
performance. I'm going to watch this immediately, because the Rick Pitino Iona, you know, he had his little scene in an Italian restaurant, and that's hard to come back from.
Yeah, no.
But he did it, and he's still rolling now.
There's a great scene in Game Day where it's like he has some date with some co-ed, like, the afternoon before this big game. She comes over to his pad, and he serves her, like, this cheap wine he had, because he only drinks like cheap beer and like scotch, and so he had this, like,
that's a coach. Yeah, they nailed that.
He had this bad wine, and so that's all he had lying around for her, and he serves her this wine in this dirty wine glass, and she comments on it's such a hilarious scene.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it this weekend. I love it.
Yeah, it's so perfect. And like, it's like he's like calling his daughter at whatever school she goes to because she doesn't want to deal with him. It's just great.
I love it. Okay, so also I needed a goddamn expert opinion, because when you gave your college basketball pick, I was really hoping you're going to say Gonzaga. We have a huge one tonight against St. Mary's, man. Like,
I'm on
St. This year is fun because it's people are jumping off the bandwagon, but this is actually one of my favorite teams.
Gambling
in a while.
Wise, I'm actually on St. Mary's tonight, and I'll tell you why. Because they've already clinched the regular season championship, and so I think leading into the conference champion tournament, Gonzaga will play down tonight, knowing they want to beat him in the conference, since they can't win the regular season tonight after they clinched against Pepperdine the other night. Gonzaga will like rest guys a little and go harder in the tournament, if that makes sense.
Because we need this win. This is the first time we're on the bubble since my sophomore year.
And I think the tournament is the path to getting in for sure.
It's fascinating to be a bubble team again. And I love being the underdog again, because somehow we turned into people thinking we're a blue blood, and we are not. We are a working class
school.
You want to hear me out? And we do not have the money to keep up right now in NIL.
Want to hear me out on how to give them the NIL money? I've been thinking about this for like two, 3 weeks now.
If I won the lottery, I would start paying players. Now, here's a question for you, Bowser.
What's that?
Why doesn't Harvard make like a 5-year run and win every national championship in every sport?
Dude, they're like, or Yale.
They have this Harvard endowment.
Isn't the Yale endowment
bigger? Isn't it like $40 billion or something?
Dude, I think
like, Yale has, you know, why doesn't Harvard say, you know what, let's put $500 million and win every goddamn sport? Or is that too much of shining a light on American capitalism in 2024?
I think.
Because if I were Harvard, like we literally, our highest paid player is like maybe 150.
I think it's because Harvard frowns on athletics because they don't want to be seen as like, oh, we make our money off it. Like, They're too elite to make their money, any kind of money off athletics, if that makes any sense.
Well, they don't need it. I mean, a lot of people don't know, and it got revealed that Gonzaga was in debt $1.5 million, which for a tiny school that was only known for Crosby or Stockton until the team, it was my roommates, went on that run.
Okay, so remember when the Big East Conference died because all the football teams went to the ACC, but didn't they were able to bring back like a basketball version of the Big East that we have now? That's a fucking one of the best conferences. I would say that right now with the Big 12 and the SEC are probably the three. And Mountain West. Fuck, Mountain West is great this year.
But and the WCC adding Washington State and Oregon State next year for basketball also helps us.
So check this out.
Because previously, we just weren't challenged in the regular season. But now, look at who Santa Clara sent to the NBA.
So
look,
they are adding Washington State, Oregon State, because that's what I'm saying. Okay, here's what they need to do.
Just in basketball, I believe. Oregon State's going to be independent in baseball. So, you know, they're perennially a top five, top 10 team.
But for football, Oregon State, Washington State should go independent. And then what they should do is link up here with the WCC, but also like kind of reform the Pac-12 as a basketball powerhouse only, where you get Gonzaga.
Oh, yeah.
St. Mary's, and then bring in like San Diego State,
exactly. Nevada, that's the one.
You bring in like a few, like San Diego State, all of a sudden like Gonzaga, St. Mary's, with the two remaining Pac-12s. That's five strong programs right there to build your conference around. Okay,
oh,
Nevada's
yeah.
not bad. Even under Al, for some reason, Alford's able to win. I fucking hate Steve Alford so much, but like he's doing a decent job there. UNLV's on the way back up. All of a sudden,
oh yeah,
you know. And then you could even get cute and like, I don't know, like UC Irvine has done a pretty good job, and like this would elevate them to another level if you made them one of the lower tier teams coming out, like poach them from the Big West.
Well, but in the WCC, you have classic teams like Loyola, Marymount, and San Francisco that somebody should come in and throw a bunch of money at it. There's no reason for them not to be competitive. I think it's kind of the Catholic, like, they, in some ways, they don't take sports as seriously, but I think they should look at Gonzaga. That team literally saved our school. We were in danger of going under.
No, but
San Francisco, you're talking about Bill Russell?
Yeah.
They won rings. Loyola Marymount.
Dude,
like,
Santa Clara had
they have so many.
Santa Clara had Steve Nash.
People that went there.
Santa Clara.
Yeah, right?
Like, dude, Steve Nash came out. I mean, dude, these programs have produced talent.
So, yeah, bring it all back. But, that, like, it's all money now, so find a way to do that in a cool way. I would love, because I don't want to see Gonzaga leave. Yeah. I mean, it's just so much darn money. And people also don't realize Coach Few's just built different. He's the one guy, I remember, like, maybe 2002, 2003. For those that didn't hear the last episode, I was the student play-by-play announcer when I was there, but they didn't have a TV deal, so I was the voice of the Zags.
Yep.
And then I left. So, and they're wonderfully loyal, and I've stayed tight with them. So, like 2003,
you've been like 25 years now.
way too long. We just did a 25th reunion show in Spokane.
Wow.
And but I remember down here, and I was walking with Coach Few. I think he was down here for like the Wooden Awards or something. And we were walking around his hotel, and he was getting the calls that UCLA was going to offer him the job. And I'm like, oh shit, here it goes. It was magic while it happened.
But yeah,
but this is over. And I'm like, I mean, you know, you got to take that, right? He's like, oh, big fella, I don't know. I just don't think you have much fishing around here. I think probably stay where we are. And he's the one guy out of 1,000 that actually does it.
Yeah, it's true. Like,
he didn't leave for UCLA. He didn't leave for the NBA. And people, everyone that counted us out this year, it's like, you don't understand, that man is an adjuster and our assistants. And like, we will figure out this NIL era, but right now it's the most pressing thing, because we just don't have the alumni.
That's what I think.
If money to keep up.
I don't think the WCC name holds enough weight to bring the money. So whereas the Pac-12 name could get a little bit bigger money. And like, so if they were to, like I'm saying, reform it, like get like Santa Clara, San Francisco, St. Mary's, Gonzaga, Loyola, San Diego State, dude, and then the Washington State, Oregon State. Like, this is a good conference all of a sudden.
It's a great conference. And also, the other amazing thing is, thankfully for that court order, Oregon State and Washington State got to keep all the money in the Pac-12 coffers.
I mean, it depends on how hard you
want to... And it's a chunk. Yeah, I think it's like 40 or 60 million. So if Gonzaga is getting offers from the Big 12 of like 8 million a year, something like that, there's a way that you can say, hey, let's give you a chunk of change right now because you're, in some ways, you know, one of the most beloved teams in America.
They would immediately
keep
become,
you in here.
They would be like, they would be the blue blood of that new West Coast, like, reform conference.
And I hate the Pac-12's going. I think about Bill Walton. I worry about him.
Yeah, like, that's why I'm wearing
my favorite television show is whatever game Bill Walton's announcing. And he loves the Conference of Champions. We go. It's a volcano. We're here. It's, and like, how do they do that to Bill? And he's just brokenhearted, and I think he can't really believe it's happening.
USC's
it just
fault.
Makes me so sad.
It's all
is that a tie-dye Conference of Champions shirt, by the way?
No, it's a sports gambling podcast shirt.
Oh, I love it. I love it, because he has his legendary tie-dye Conference of Champions shirt.
No, it's SC's fault, and then UCLA had to go with them to keep the rivalry together and their financial problems, and then it triggered the whole thing. Really, it's Texas and Oklahoma's fault. When they decided they're going to go from the Big 12 to the SEC, everybody panicked and started all this reshuffling.
Oh, and God.
What's going to happen here is we're just going to end up with two power conferences, essentially, of the SEC and the Big 10. And everybody's kind of fucked. I think the new Big 12, though, for basketball, dude, because the Big 12 right now as a basketball conference is incredible. Even losing like Texas and Oklahoma next year. Dude, the addition of Houston, like BYU's playing in there now. Just be Kansas just beat Kansas in Fog Allen Arena. Like, dude, Big 12 is looking. I right now, I'll give you guys right now. Here's it. You like a nice little future bet for March Madness. Give me Iowa State to win it all. Like, it's like 18-1.
No way.
They play such crazy deep. Dude, they held Oklahoma to like 48 points the other night.
Did they really? Okay, you heard her here first.
Yeah, and not only that, like they just went on a run a couple years ago. Like, this team, like, this program has, like, they know what they're doing in March, and they play defense, which translates to the tournament. So at 18-1, I don't think you're getting much better value. I think it's going to be a Big 12 team probably that wins it this year. I don't think it's going to be Kansas. I don't think it's going to be Baylor. You know, and so you start kind of doing it process elimination. Iowa State looks like they might be the one that pulls this out this year. And like,
that's what's so fun is there's not one dominant one this year.
And then I think you can probably get a good price of like 4-1, 5-1 on them to make the final four. I love that.
Man, I love that. I love that. Bring it back to Ames.
Yeah. So yeah, I think Iowa State's right now, they're like my favorite sleeper. But dude, you add Arizona now to this conference, along with Utah, Colorado, Arizona State, none of those three teams are bad. So, but
well, I'm also very biased there because Tommy Lloyd was our head assistant for years, and he's just, you would love him. He's a genius. It's not like, well, you would love him. He's a genius. He's in Lithuania, staying in Arvydas Sabonis' summer house for 3 weeks, came back with DeMontis. Let's go. But Tommy Lloyd is a great human being, and he'll, you know, you can drop him with a backpack anywhere in the world and he'll make friends. And watch what happens with Arizona's international recruiting now.
Oh, I can imagine.
It is going to go to another place. I think Tommy Lloyd will win a national championship maybe within the next 5 years.
I agree.
I just love the guy.
Well, because I always think in college basketball, especially the better conference you play in, like steel sharpens steel.
Right, so, that's it. You know? And that's what's hurt Gonzaga for so long.
And so, because like it's just they don't have that night in, night out.
As dude, Walton said, well, you're playing the Sisters of the Poor.
I mean, that's why I love – looking back, dude, that era of the late 80s, early 90s, like mid 90s of Big East basketball.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable. Because ESPN had that deal. I know. They had games on ESPN every night, and it's Syracuse, Georgetown, Connecticut, Like, dude, even Providence, like under Pitino, had their years. Like,
so fun.
Those games were so much fun because those teams like hated each other. Villanova, they went at each other hard. St. John's, like, dude.
Oh, right.
Like, dude, run our test at St. John's.
Like, remember when John Chaney threatened to kill Calipari?
Yes,
at a post game press conference.
I was just
bring it back.
That.
We need more of that, Bowser. Fuck.
And I like the new Big East now because, like, it's different. But like Creighton, Marquette, who else have they added? That Butler. Like, there's a lot of teams that necessarily weren't like. That have kind of those mid majors that elevated themselves, and now this new Big East is a lot of fun. And I think the Pac 12 can do something similar. I really do.
Man, I would love it. I put you in charge tomorrow. We need a new commissioner in there
for basketball's sake, you know? Like, I know.
Yeah, I just can't believe we're not going to have a Pac 12. It's like these things in society that just keep going away because of money. And I'm like, what? Really?
I think I'm going to get tickets for 2 weeks. I'm going to try and get tickets for at least one or two of the games a little bit for the Pac 12 tournament out here because it's the last one. It's like, I gotta go. I went before when it was at Staples Center, and dude, the year I went when I was at Staples Center was insane because me and my brother went to the Final Four of the Pac-12 tournament that year, so we went to both games.
Oh.
Bro, it was the year that Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook team for UCLA played the OJ Mayo team against SC in the semi.
Wow,
and the other game was the Lopez twins Stanford team. Against Klay Thompson's Washington State team. Dude, I saw so much like elite NBA talent out there.
My God.
It was insane. Yeah, it was
how cool.
That was a really cool double.
That's
a hell of a doubleheader, dude.
No, that just works, man. And what I love is those guys are still playing. Like, Klay is now thriving off that bench. His shooting percentage is through the roof. I guess he yelled at Kerr and was really sad and resistant, but like
Love's car
go beat
out a nice
up about a second unit until you get right. Like, it's awesome. Kevin Love is still playing well, and he looks like a pharmaceutical rep. Like, he's just got this salt and pepper beard, and you're like, you know, he's not buff anymore, but he's just dominating. And I'm like, you know, let those guys keep playing well because I don't feel quite as old. King.
He doesn't bring up his stupid uncle anymore.
No, dude, no, no, man, his uncle's an ass.
He's the worst. And it
just
sucks.
Picking on Brian Wilson for 50 years now.
Oh, God, dude. I mean, and Brian Wilson technically is his uncle, too. For those that are aware, Mike Love of the Beach Boys is Kevin Love's uncle. And Brian Wilson is, too, because they're all, like, they're all related. But, like, they're cousins. But, yeah, like, I hear Brian Wilson suffering from dementia. That's a real bummer. But
that's a huge bummer because I've seen him before, and it's a joyful experience. Like, you know, he's beaming and playing these songs, and he can still hit those high notes. He's got a little help.
You know who's doing?
I'm glad I saw him when I did.
You know who's still hitting the high notes out here in his 90s? That's doing a residency right now. That I've been trying to find tickets for, but they're kind of hard to come by at the Westgate. Is the Frankie Valli?
Oh my God! And well, in the Westgate, that's Elvis's hotel.
Yep, that's Elvis.
You need to at least one time get that Elvis suite up there,
dude. Well,
I think
you know
they
what?
Remodeled it and like subdivided it, but like Frankie Valli plays there, Barry Manilow plays there. I saw Wayne Newton maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
That's where
and
I watched
was one of those. It was on StubHub, and
how about
I
this?
Looked at the thing and I'm like, it's $10. I got to go see Wayne.
That's actually where I'm going to be watching March Madness in that showroom.
No, at the Westgate?
In the showroom.
God, that's awesome. Yeah, that's Elvis energy, brother.
Sandy,
how's that hotel to stay in? Nice.
I don't know. I don't overstay at the hotel. I live here. I don't stay at the hotel.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I want to stay there at least one time. And I'm like, I don't care that it's off the strip. I'm really heartbroken that Vegas has taken the Oakland A's.
That's actually one of my biggest things here is when friends are in town, I always come ask to go up and see their room because I want to see what the rooms look like in all these places. Yeah, because I never know what the
have
rooms
you been
look
in
like.
The Elvis room?
No, never. I've never known.
We're gonna get in
there.
We're gonna everybody bet Iowa State and then listen to Bowser, and we're gonna take the huge insane windfalls, and we're gonna go and we're gonna rent the Elvis suite, and we're gonna see Frankie Valli.
No, but yeah, that's where we go for the Sports Gambling Podcast. Gets this booth, like the Sinatra style booth, in the back of the theater. And that's where we watch like week one NFL every year and then March Madness. I wasn't here for the March Madness one last year because I was down in Laughlin, but that's where I'll be watching. So if anybody's in town for March Madness this year, the first 2 days, I will be in the theater at the Westgate. Come say hi.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. I love it. Of course you're there. That's your brand. It's perfect.
No, they do a good job. They take care of us there. Did they give us like stacks of drink and food tickets and stuff? So it's a good time. Dude, speaking of Vegas here, this is a great segue now, because I found something out this week. If you think the mob has not left this town, I figured out what they're doing and how they're fucking... I don't know if it's...
Gimme.
Okay.
Gimme. So,
all right.
Because I hope they're still out there.
Okay, so I have a source.
I don't want this corporate shit. Yeah. I want fucking bodies in the desert.
They're doing it through like a corporate fucking way.
Well, so, yeah.
It's new school.
Yeah.
But I just found this out. So like the slot machines have to like regulate how many spins. Like the number of spins that the machines do is very regulated by the state, by everything. Like you would think it's not a big deal, but like... But it makes sense because it's like you're supposed to make certain handle off certain spins. So if the spins isn't matching up to the dollar amount, all of a sudden, hey, what's going on here? You know, it's like – so the casinos pay these different companies. There's a few of them. And basically the companies charge these casinos to count their fucking spins. They charge 3.5 cents per spin.
No.
Okay, your average machine does 50,000 to 100,000 spins a week.
No. No.
So every machine...
Are you kidding me, buddy?
So, dude, not at all, dude. So every machine pays about that much money out to these independent contractors that are counting the fucking... You think those companies are owned by the mob, dude?
I have no comment. Dude. I'm not going to be a big hole in the desert.
Isn't that crazy?
How did you find this shit out, bro?
Well, I'm not speaking of holes in the desert.
Okay, please. No. You know, and we respect them.
No,
unorthodox businesses.
Basically, I saw.
I think it was run better with the mob than with these corporations. What do you think?
I'll actually tell you what it was. I saw the trucks of one of the companies that was out in front of the casino as I was driving by. And it looked like one of the companies that does like the air and humidifier stuff for the cannabis business that I work in. So I thought, I was like, hey, did they work? And we just did a big remodel at my work like last year. So I was like, hey, were they one of the ones that did the remodel? I kept thinking, I'm like, because like there was this one asshole company where we actually fired them halfway through the job. And like these people were just like the biggest pricks on the planet. I was like, hey, is that those jerk offs? And so I looked it up and then I kind of like researched what the company does basically. And I found out. But,
oh my gosh, you're breaking stories here, man.
And then I have
this a is source. Why you're the man of the desert.
I have a friend in a casino, and so I asked them, and they're like, oh yeah,
holy,
I know all about that.
Holy shit,
know all about it. Pretty crazy.
Well, man. I'm glad they're still involved personally. I'm in favor of it. I think when they left Vegas, a lot of the heart did.
Oh yeah,
there's like, honor among thieves, and as Bob Dylan said, if you want to live outside the law, you must be honest.
I miss the Stardust more than anything. The Stardust was one of my favorite casinos of all time. For those not familiar, it's the one that the Tangiers in the movie Casino is based on. That was the main one.
Oh, is that true, really?
That's the main one that Frank Lefty Rosenthal ran. But they actually shot Casino at the Riviera. And then they like,
which isn't the Riviera going to get knocked down for
it's already John gone down. No, it's already gone down. The Tropicana is getting knocked down for the Tropicana sucks though. And honestly, the Tropicana is so old and decaying, and the last couple ownership groups have neglected it for so long, that you really would just have to tear it down. Like, the rooms are all moldy and bed-bugged. Like, it's really not worth salvaging.
Dude, they've had bed-bugs at, like, nice hotels this month.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm totally paranoid and freaked out about bed-bugs. And forever, it's like, why I won't do a cheap hotel, and I'll read the ratings because I'm so paranoid of bed bugs. Because if you bring them back home, you're paying thousands to get that shit fumigated.
Yep.
I'm soft, Bowser. I'm soft. But, like, it's terrifying. And how do you stop this shit? Like, these are big casinos that just had bed bugs. Big ones.
You know what you can do to avoid the big casinos? I'm going to go just remind our listeners to about Underdog Fantasy.
Oh, and, perfect. What a segue. Dude, you can't teach this shit you're doing today. The segue into Vegas, the segue into that, I just stand in awe.
I'm a professional, man. That's all I got to
say.
Wow. Underdog Fantasy is the place where you can play their higher or lower pick 'em, which I'm a big fan of, and I told you I'm going to give you a pick later in the thing, and so here I will. I like... you can do like player stats and all this stuff for your higher or lower contest. But you can also do their total fantasy points. So let's combine two NBA foreign big men, Victor Wembanyama and Nikola Jokic, over fantasy points.
Wow.
Combine both those hires together in one of these pick-ems. Bam. That's going to make your week. That's going to make your week, everybody. And that's one of those ones where I would be willing to play that every time they're playing on the same night. Just play that.
Right? Come on. Let's go. Are we afraid of money?
We're not.
Afraid of success? No, we're not. Not here.
We are not. So remember, go to Underdog Fantasy and use promo code LSH and get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. And if you don't, you know, must be 18 and over, present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Bam.
Bam.
You know,
well done.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I take pride in my ad reads.
I could tell it's a company you really support and you're fired up about.
Yeah.
And some podcasts, like, it's like they're doing it like a Vietnam POW. And I'm like, these are the people paying your rent, homie. Like, dude.
Well, like, okay, one thing with Underdog Fantasy, which I love. Also, make sure you're in a state where Underdog Fantasy is available. No. One thing, they do Best Ball Mania for NFL. And that's going to get started. Dude, I'll be doing that hard in the promos coming up soon as those start. But are you familiar with Best Ball Fantasy football?
Not at all.
Oh, dude, it's the best. Because
get me hip, dude.
I love fantasy football. I play in I do a lot of lineups every year. Okay. It's kind of, and I'm very good at best ball. I'm good at it in general. I've won some big money leagues last couple of years in like the FFPC fantasy football players championship, which is kind of a higher stakes, big tournament style. I'm in a dynasty league there that I just won this last year. And then I've also won a main event league. I've won a fantasy pros players championship league. I've won several best ball. So I know what I'm doing. And I've cashed in for a little money in the tournaments as well. So not huge. It's like some of them have like $1 million prizes, but like, dude, each last couple of years, I don't know, like last 3 years, I've probably made like $7,000, $8,000.
Dude, that's nothing to sneeze at. Are you kidding? That'll work. You're playing chess.
Yeah. Here's the thing: is I take when they offer the prize, I always take the more credits for more lineups, and then just a little bit of cash. And so I'll slowly cash out here and there at a time, but I just start going hard on the lineups down the line. You know, where I'm just like, until I get a $500 prize, I'm like, all right, now I'll cash that out instead of just taking the lineups or whatever.
Oh, smart.
So I just kind of keep rolling. I turn $5 ones into $35 ones, turn the $35 ones into $125 ones, work my way up the ladder.
Wow.
Yeah. But Underdog Fantasy, see, this isn't part of the ad read. This is me just talking about a thing I like. They have the $25 Best Ball Mania. I think it's like a $4 million, $4.3 million grand prize pool last year or something like that. It was like a $2 million prize of the grand prize of the winner. Yeah, it's no joke.
What?
$25 to get in. It's half point PPR, so you get half a point for every catch that receivers and running backs make, tight ends. So it's a little different than a lot of other stuff, which is full point PPR. But you just draft your team and forget about it. You don't have to set your lineup each week.
Amazing.
So you draft like three quarterbacks. Whichever one of those quarterbacks does the best score, that's the one you get credit for in your lineup that week.
How cool.
So what it's a lot of fun. It's like, yeah, dude, like you use my promo code, right? Put $100 in, you get another free $100. You just, for four, you just got eight best ball, $25 entries for the big prize.
Wow.
Chase those millions. And I'm going to be doing a lot of those live drafts here on the show throughout the summer with my brother and Decker and stuff. Probably Johnny Pemberton will join me.
I love Johnny.
I was helping him manage a team, his team this season, and he was not doing well. And then I started helping him, and all of a sudden he made the playoffs and almost like made it to like the final four or whatever and in his league. And I was very proud of that. But I was like, here, I'll show you how to do it. So I got him in the FFPC playoff contest with me. And we did a $35 lineup that won $125 lineup for next year. So we'll be doing that for sure on an episode. But then I'm going to get him to do some of these underdog ones with me too. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But I love them because you don't have to like manage it. Like when I do the FFPC main event, that's a $2,000 team. Me and my friend Ryan Kramer, we split them together each year, last couple of years. And we've done well with them. Like last year, we won a free one. We didn't do that this year. But him and Sean Green won a free one and another thing, and Sean doesn't want to bother with it. So I'm going to be taking over his share on this one. So
still get in. But the thing with the main, like, yeah, it's $2,000. We do it live in here in Vegas in like a big conference. It's like the World Series of Poker for fantasy. And that's the big boy, like, and like, so I do that, my dynasty league. And then we also do, me and Kramer do a fantasy pros, which is the same exact format as the main event. It's just more teams for only $350.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's the same prize format, same structure and everything. You're just competing against more people and you pay a lower fee.
Nah.
But yeah, right. I'm telling you, Underdog Best Ball Mania for $25, I think that's the best value. Like, dude, because really, like, having a few of those lineups in your back pocket, that's fun to pay attention to throughout the NFL season. That, and you don't have to do any real work other than, oh, how to do this week? Oh, sweet.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, got that coming up. I did mention the my photo finish stream coming up with the horse racing thing. One thing I'm doing right now that is pretty cool is I'm play testing a game, a soccer game right now.
Oh, wow.
I am in the middle of that. So I was up at 6 a.m. play testing today because my team play. It's similar to the horse racing where it's like these NFT gaming things where it's like you buy the NFT that gives you ownership of this team in this game. So I own three teams actually because the price on the lower division clubs went down really bad last summer when a lot of the market was tanking. And so I just swooped up a couple and the market's gotten better. I could probably sell them for a profit both right now, but I'm going to wait until the actual launch of the game after all these play tests are done when there's a higher demand for immediate people. And I should be able to sell those for a decent market. But I'm also thinking of just using them as kind of feeder clubs for my main team. So, you know, so I can kind of basically frack them of all their resources, wait for someone to put an offer in on it on the thing, and then I'll just accept the transfer all the good stuff over to my other team and take the offer for the money. I mean, that's pretty shameless. I don't think I'll do that. But, like, there's ways of going about it. I was actually thinking of even, like, auctioning off one of the teams for a fundraiser for my dental work. Like, I don't know. We'll do something with it. But I'm actually testing two of the teams right now, and they got put in the same league. My buddy JG, he's testing two teams too. They're in different, like, divisions, so he has no problem. They're not even in the same league, division, let alone the same league. But yeah, mine are in the same league. So I realized, like, these playtest rosters, they just kind of randomly assign you a bunch of guys at random positions. So if you want to run, like, in soccer, like a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2 or, you know, a 1-5, what is it, the 1-5-1-1-2 or whatever, like, it's a whole, like, you might not be dealt the hand of those players. So what I did was I have one team running a 4-3-3 and one team running a 4-4-2. I put all the better players that, my 4-4-2 team is the one that matters to me, my Pridpon Park team. So I put all the best players I can there, built around that lineup. But all the guys that were pretty good that just don't fit that lineup in their positions, I put over to the other team and then figured out what's the best to use with all these spare parts. That team with the spare parts, I think, is doing better right now after a couple of games maybe. But then you also have academy prospects. I've called up a few from the academy, and I've been training them. I got a whole thing going with this. So, but it's 22 games in 11 days. The games are at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. for my league. So it's kind of fun watching these. I'm up early making roster moves. But like the first day, I thought I was like, I'm just going to set the lineups, like just auto pick. Let's see what happens. And it didn't. I didn't hit save on them because they changed for the button. And then so it did like a horrible mismatch lineup for me and both. And both teams got their ass kicked hard. One lost 2-0. The other lost 5-0. But then since the others lost 1-2-3-0 games and the others won 2-2-0 games.
Fuck yeah.
But it's the one that's won 2-2-0 games is where I'm putting all the good players and this like vagabond group of Bad News Bears, the other team, is winning, blowing teams out 3-0.
Yeah, there's a lesson in it. You try to do some like corporate rigging and then no, the team with heart, they got chemistry. They're winning.
Yeah, they're doing it. I think they've also had an easier schedule. I think that's been part of it. But
That'll
definitely help. But yeah, it's a fun game. It's called Footium. So if anybody interested, I can teach you how to get a club. They're not that much right now. People are they're selling them pretty cheap, but there's only 3,060 available for the game until they do like an inspection. So that's why I figured, I'm like, there's a finite number of these teams. It's not like you can just keep making new leagues, like a fantasy league. But it is a lot like fantasy to me, and agree, where it's a 12-team league. It's like, I know how to sit down at a table and beat 11 other dudes. I do it every fucking fall, and I'll do it the rest of the year in this soccer bullshit. That's the way I look at it.
Fuck yeah.
All right, I don't want to get too political, but I thought of the darkest joke I've thought of in a while. So I'm gonna fucking just do the bit here on the show, or like, because I was kind of laughing because I was thinking of like what's going on in Gaza, and it's sad. There's a lot of atrocities going on there right now, and so I want to start a charity. It's called Cigarettes for Gaza, because if they're going to line these people up like they're a fucking firing squad anyway, let's at least give them a fucking heater to burn on the way out.
I'm Daddy Shark on Nickelodeon's Baby Shark Show. I cannot say a word aside from I love you.
Yeah, I'm not expecting anyone to agree with me on this, but if you want to send a pack of Marlboros, I'll make sure they go to the right place. See, and like, okay, this is comedy. I'm not actually going to send cigarettes to people getting killed in the Middle East. I'm not going to do that. They like opium.
They prefer opium. Come on. Yeah. Oh, man. Bring opium back.
Okay. I probably shouldn't have done that show. I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, as long as your sponsor's okay with it, friend.
I think the sponsor's fine with it. I don't think the sponsor listens to the show. So.
I'm sad I can't yes and comedy anymore. Because they'll just, yeah, what they did to that poor A.O. Edebiri with the J-Lo podcast. I'm like, they just, what? How did we enter an era where tattletaling is cool? Like, it used to be tattletales were the lamest, and now they're these dorks that just look to try to grab some podcast clip of anyone to try to destroy them.
Oh, I know what it is. I have a theory on this. Do you want to
give me?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's the fans of a lot of these people that do it to them. Because they like having these like martyr figures to look for. Like, they got canceled, but they're coming back. So they're the ones doing the cancel, like Shane Gillis.
No way.
Shane Gillis is a great example. I think it's his fans telling on him more than anything, so they can have this like counterculture guy to root for. Where it's like the guy's hosting fucking SNL. It's about as mainstream as it gets. Like, and like,
and the people that don't watch, I think they think he's. They don't know. They think he's far right. Where I'm like, no, he's actually making fun of through himself in kind of an interesting way.
Yeah, very funny but comic. But
they want to claim him.
Yeah.
And when he says that shit, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell?
But like they love having guys get canceled. But see, like I've said this before on the show, like no one ever really gets canceled in comedy. You might just get a new audience.
Like, yeah, if anything, cancel people then move into comedy. Without naming names, there's two or three people I can think of right now that got canceled from acting that just slid into comedy. And like kind of alt-right podcasts.
Yeah, or like good example, like Louis C.K. Like, dude, like fuck this. Bill Cosby. Dude, he got released out of prison and he's touring again now. Like on a
selling out places in like Connecticut.
Yeah, dude.
And then, I don't think he did it. But then there's this Neil Young song called When Bad Got Good. There's this whole amount of people that suddenly like someone just because they get accused of something. Because they think they're thumbing their nose at the lips.
So that's what I'm saying. Something. Yeah, exactly.
Like if you looked at Trevor Bauer's fan base, every time someone on Instagram posts about Trevor Bauer, it's like he's got this mob of people because he's defiantly kind of MAGA. And so they're like, yo, what'd he do? Even better.
Yeah.
I'm going to troll any person that says,
and that you get this, like, it trickles into like this whole, great example is like Joe Rogan, right? People like to make it seem like people are trying to get, like, dude, Spotify gave him the biggest deal in the history of podcasting. He's got the most popular podcast in the world. Here's the thing though. He's a comedian with the most popular podcast in the world. I've never once heard anybody say in my life, man, that show's hilarious. I've never once heard that. I'm not saying this is the funniest fucking show, but I do bits, okay? You know, like, Like, I at least make an effort to throw some punchlines in here and there. Fucking A, dude. Like,
yeah, if you want to hear a 3-hour, 45-minute interview with Sturgill Simpson, Joe's the guy.
Yeah.
The other thing with him, when you know, people try to cancel him, I'm like, well, he lets himself get live fact-checked on the air. I don't know how, like, I saw one of them where he was, like, saying that the vaccine was causing more heart stuff than COVID. He's like, a guest said, no, Joe, the COVID is, and he's like, I don't think so. And he's like, and they're like, no, the spike protein that's in the vaccine, yeah, it caused a certain tiny percentage, but the actual COVID is much worse. He's like, no, I don't think so. And then his brother, whoever the fact checker was, is like, actually, the heart stuff's a lot worse from COVID. He's like, are you sure? Are you sure about that? And I'm like, you guys paint this guy as this devil, and he's just allowed himself to be wrong on the air and get fact checked and didn't edit it out. Like, that to me is like,
yeah, you know, it's just. To me, it's something. Just lazy producing at the end of it. Like, a lot of it is like, dude, just don't do it live. Trim the show down more. Like, cut out some garbage.
Hey, I don't think we're in any position to question him because of that money he's got.
But, like, it's just one of those things.
And, like, I was on a flight once where I wanted a three-hour 40. I didn't know who Sturgill Simpson was, and I was fascinated by him. And I'm like, all right, I'm down to hear 3 hours and 45 seconds with him. Like, you know, it's entertaining.
But, like, I'm trying to think of another, like – oh, I mean, there's guys like Chris D'Elia where it's like, they're about as creepy as it gets, but like, he sucks at comedy and it causes people to come out of the woodwork when he starts grooming underage girls.
When bad got good, if there's allegations, like, man, John Wayne Gacy would be huge these days.
Oh, dude.
He'd be selling out comedy clubs with or without the clown.
Think about how far Ted
Bundy's... What'd he do? Oh, that's bullshit. The libs are trying to cancel him.
Think about
that crawl space was just for storage.
Not even doing this for a joke. Think about how well Ted Bundy would have done in today's modern Republican Party, because he was like a upcoming guy working in the party for politicians, like working on campaigns in Washington and Utah as he was a fucking serial killer. Think about how, dude, he probably would have serial killed his way to the White House.
Yeah, and he probably wouldn't have been the first. Like, that was the thing, was he defended himself in court, because I'm from the Northwest, and like,
Ted Bundy's part
of the lore there.
Yes.
And my cousin worked at the University of Puget Sound Library underneath his mother, Louise Bundy, and she was just in, like, deep denial, would call him, she'd hear him calling him. But Ted Bundy not only defended himself in court, but did an incredible job, where one of the judges, as he sentenced him for multiple murders, is like, it's just such a shame, because this is the legal world's giant loss. You would have been amazing. You did better than lawyers in here, and you never passed the bar. You never went to law. Like, this is ridiculous. But
did he drop out of law school after like a semester?
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, he would have thrived in today's political climate, because he just would have.
Yeah.
No, they weren't there.
I didn't kill all those girls. They're trying to cancel me.
Somebody that looks like me. It's a bad deal. It's a raw deal, Bowser.
I mean, it's just so funny. But yeah, like, I think that's the end of it. Like, with this whole cancel culture thing, people want to root for the, like, perceived martyr or whatever.
Well, they think it's punk rock or it's edgy.
Yeah. Where it's like,
and it just is not.
It's not. And like,
I love the people that are like, no. Where Shane Gillis is like, oh, you think it's cool I said those things? You're a fucking idiot. I was rambling on a podcast.
I saw a very funny thing, a funny meme, like, about Blazing Saddles, where I was like, the people that are like, you couldn't make Blazing Saddles nowadays, and then imagine an alternate timeline where Blazing Saddles is made nowadays. That same person goes, Blazing Saddles of woke garbage.
Completely. That's the message of Blazing Saddles. That's amazing. And it's completely true. They would hate it.
They nailed it. Yeah.
Like, oh, well, they're making fun of the racists. Holy shit. This thing is woke. Oh, Hollywood again.
Yeah. Dude,
that's brilliant, man.
Yeah, I wish I knew whose meme that was so I can give them credit for it, but it's a fucking meme. I guess these things get thrown in the ether, but
they get thrown around, but boy, does that nail it.
That nails it so
hard. Because, like,
hard.
We should be able to make fun of racists. Yeah. That is very important, and sometimes I'll see people criticizing stuff, and I'm like, well, they're making fun of the racist, and as somebody who, you know, Hollywood has tapped time and time again to play a racist or two, like, it's my job to do the best job I can, because these fucking idiots exist. And, like, they're making fun of racism. Like, you get your comeuppance. Like, I didn't live through Green Room. Like, shit, the racists got to get their due and be shown to be a fucking idiot.
Dude, I just found out that Green Book, speaking of racist stuff, that the movie Green Book, that the guy, that the Viggo Mortensen character in that, was based on actor Tony Lip, who was Carmine Lupertazzi Sr. in The Sopranos. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. That's and so amazing
on there too, right?
Yeah, yeah, dude, yeah.
But let me ask you this, Bowser, because I know we both worship at the altar of The Sopranos. When I watched it the second time, that was when I was like, with all due respect to Curb, Seinfeld, Taxi, whatever, Sopranos is the funniest show to me that's ever
existed. I agree. I think it was the third or fourth time. Because
it's so real and they're such fucking idiots. And the bad guys always get their comeuppance there as well. But it's so goddamn funny. Every bit of it's hilarious.
I think it was the third or fourth time where I was like, I'm like, this is a comedy.
It's a comedy.
I don't care what anybody says. It's a 1 hour comedy show.
No, it's, I think part of it's the Lebowski effect. Cause the first time I watched Lebowski, I'm like, okay, that was good. But you're so wrapped up in the plot swirling around. The second time you watch it, where you know what's happening, like, oh my God, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I feel lucky to be a part of it. These performances are so achingly, hilariously real. And I think that's kind of the similar thing with The Sopranos.
Yeah, because the first time, it's just this. I mean, first off, we've never really explored the mob like this, where it's really getting into the home life. But yeah, there's scenes in Goodfellas where Karen's yelling at Henry, but like, it's not like where you see his son being a shithead, cheating on tests, you know, pissing in the pool at school.
Yeah.
Like mobsters having to discipline their sons, their teenage sons.
Oh, yeah.
That's just hilarious in itself, because it's like, who are they to fucking say anything about following rules, being a decent person?
Dude, the Columbus Day episode? Are you kidding me?
Oh, so good. And like, I mean, and I think here's the thing with The Sopranos too, is the acting is so fucking good in it, and the writing is it's the rare occurrence where everything is at top level. Because there's a lot of times where there's a really good show, and you're like, man, that's so good, but like the camera work or whatever just doesn't quite do it all justice or whatever. But Sopranos, like, literally, there's not one detail that's not amazing about.
No, it's so goddamn perfect.
And so, like, yeah, I don't know. Some of my favorite comedy in The Sopranos is, I don't know. There's a great Instagram account, Sopranfeld. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Where they combine Seinfeld and Sopranos stuff to make, like, it's happening all in the same universe. And that shit is hilarious. But yeah, with Sopranos, like, the funniest stuff to me, I realize, is okay, I think when in season two, after Janice kills Richie, when she's like, what'd you do with him? He's like, we put him on a hill overlooking a lake. She's like, really? He's like, what the fuck do you care, Janice? We killed him. You killed him.
And we have to talk about David Provol.
Oh, dude, I've heard he's a huge asshole. I've had friends that worked with him that he was not fun to be around.
Well, I think that was the genius of David Chase's casting, because I will never besmirch a fellow character actor, but I think David Chase had that thing where he could look into people's souls, and to me, really, there was nobody more terrifying.
Oh yeah,
on The Sopranos, and Tony calls him out, and I think David Provol probably hated it. He goes, with the Manson lamps. Because he has Manson lamps.
He does.
And he's terrifying. And so deeply unreasonable and unmoving. Like, he's a mountain that won't move.
Yeah, I would say, I agree. He's the most terrifying guy on there. But, like, Joe Pantoliano is the most unhinged guy.
He's unhinged, but he's not terrifying. Like,
no, he's not.
He was trying to fill those shoes. And, like, the Pile My stuff is great.
He's scary. He's a scary guy. But
he's totally scary, but he's David Provol, like Joe Pantoliano, you just kind of know in the trailer beforehand, he'd be talking about summer stock and singing show tunes and like telling stories.
I mean,
like,
when he
crank calls, Bob called me.
When he crank called David Pauly's Provol, mom.
Man, is like, and he was furious. He wasn't on there right away.
Yeah.
He was just furious. He felt like Mean Streets was such an influence on it. And he was deeply offended that he wasn't on there. When they finally came around, I think he had a chip on his shoulder coming in like Russell Westbrook. And, like, there's nobody more terrifying. Like, when Janice kills him, It's so satisfying because he's so scary. Like, is this the guy that's going to kill Tony? Because he's so unreasonable.
Well,
because you and I both love vintage clothing and fun stuff. The shit with the jacket, when he gives Tony the jacket. Because I've had people give me stuff, and like, my wife has a war on clutter. Not something that wears, they're like, I'm gonna have a giant weird torso. If it doesn't fit, I'm going to re-gift it.
No, and that's one of my favorite things about the show is next time you watch Sopranos, watch every time someone comes out of prison, how they're stuck in the wardrobe of what they wore before they went to prison.
Oh, genius. Buscemi,
Buscemi with the Provol. Miami Vice suit. Provol with the members only jacket. Like,
My God, you're so right. I'm sure there's mob guys getting out now in those like big boxy cut 90s suits.
And they got those
which are coming back, thank God. Yeah, I'm glad. I didn't need the skinny jeans trend, my brother.
I actually have a couple double-breasted boxy. I'm glad those are coming back because like I have a cream.
Well, blend. I think your wardrobe is glorious because you pay tribute to the greats like Gandolfini while it's deeply your own style.
I remember for Sean Green and Tess Barker's wedding a few years ago. Yeah, I wore like a cream colored double-breasted suit.
Oh,
like
you can't brown teach shirt. Class. You're just born with it.
I look like Vito Genovese. Like, it was pretty cool. Like, everyone was like, wow, dude, you look awesome. Like,
People are afraid to do that shit now. So, like, let Sopranos and mob culture be more of a style influence, I think.
I'm actually wearing
that shit back.
I'm wearing a tracksuit under my.
Oh, yeah. I'm wearing tracksuit camo pants. Yeah, like, it's raining here. I ain't going anywhere. It's so comfortable.
Green velvet tracksuit pants that I'm wearing.
COVID changed everything for me. I used to wear, like, the nice denim and like, you know, selvedge denim. And this is a company called Raleigh that makes the best stretch denim. It doesn't look stretch. Feels like a tracksuit. I'm never going back. I look at the canvas shit I used to wear and I'm like, God, I was living like an animal.
I try to dress like a Sopranos cast member on vacation, Hawaiian shirts, knit polo shirts, golf shirts. That's
perfect because it's mob without being mob, but it's what they actually wore. It's glorious.
Yeah, it's you don't try too hard with it. That's the number.
No, one and you pull it off. Just you nail the landing every time.
Next time you're out here, you got to go to Capo's Steakhouse, which is like a mob themed like speakeasy.
Oh, and done. I would love it.
Let's enter through like the phone booth in the back, and they got really good food there, and they always have like live music. It's either the sax guy, the piano guy, or the singer. So,
I just got tickets. I'll coming out there in June for the Dead and Company.
Oh, sweet.
At the Sphere.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah,
the house that Jimmy Dolan built. So,
yeah,
we'll
dude.
See. We'll see. Okay, what it is.
You know, we got to get going here in a minute. But you just brought up Jimmy Dolan, so we'll close the episode on this. Dolan cracks me up out of every NBA owner, maybe the most, because you know about. I have a theory why the New York Knicks, like one of the prestige teams in the league, why they have not been able to sign a big free agent under Jimmy Dolan. Do you know, like, have you heard how he, like, because he's in, like, that bar blues band?
I saw open for the fucking Eagles.
Dude, I've heard, that's amazing. Dude, I've heard that.
Bowser, JG in the straight shot opened for the Eagles.
Don
he flies
Henley,
his band around in Joe a private Wall jet. He has the best blues players in the world.
Dude, so Joe Dolan sends out his band's CDs with like the free agent like greeting pack or whatever. Like, dude, like, okay, if I'm, let's say I'm Mark Cuban, right? Dude, I'm probably a guy who's a free agent. I'm set, like, the second they come in the door, maybe giving them a gift of, like, brand new iWatch that no one else can get or something like that. Like, some, you're known for being a tech guy, some sort of gizmo, some sort of thing that no one's ever heard of. And you're like, yeah, here, come sign here. You're going to get this kind of shit all the time. You know, like, that's how you do it. Like, but you don't go, by the way, Jimmy in the straight shots playing. And it's like, he's the asshole. Like, yeah, I could book myself at Madison Square Garden. You fucking own Madison Square Garden, you fucking asshole.
He plays the Forum.
Yeah, like.
He plays the Forum. Like, I went in, I could not believe what I was seeing.
I've seen the Beastie Boys at the Forum. I've seen Elton John and Billy Joel at the Forum.
You could have seen James Dolan.
See James Dolan at the fucking Forum.
And it's Emperor's New Clothes, you know? But I'm hesitant to even say anything because he's the kind of... He uses facial recognition technology to ban people from Madison Square Garden.
It's fucking crazy, dude. He banned Charles Oakley.
Dude, had security drag down Charles fucking Oakley.
Dude.
Like, are you kidding? But, like, he's facial recognition technology.
I'll tell you right now, I'm not fucking with Charles Oakley.
Hell no. Hell no. And, like, if somebody heckles him, they're banned, they're facially scanned or whatever, like... It's the world we live in where that's, these kind of billionaires are winning. But, and like the Sphere was like $2 billion. It went like $1 billion over budget. Well, I'm still going to be there. But like,
you know,
I could not believe I was seeing JG in the straight shot open.
It's,
and
it's,
you know, that's thing. Also got to be the worry. Not only is he giving his CDs, but he signs a big free agent. You're going to get invited to all of his shows. Say, hey, we're doing an intimate little blues club. Love it if you could come down. Be great if you could come down.
Well, it's the same thing.
And he's going to keep asking you.
How Woody Allen plays his jazz clarinet, like that Greenwich Village club, like every Sunday
I've
night.
I've been. My mom is a huge Woody Allen nut. And we went when we were when I was 12 years old. That was the New York centerpiece
of the trip. Apparently
now.
I think
it's at the Hotel Carlisle.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, yeah. I think now he charges like $2,500 a ticket, some crazy amount.
No, does he really?
To price out hecklers. So only the most committed diehard fans, because he hasn't had the best run since you were 12 years old. And so
does he really?
Yeah.
So that is wild.
Okay, that number, I don't know what, it might be like 500, but it's a
crazy. But enough, you're not going to heckle anyone for 500 bucks.
Yeah, you're not spending, you're not doing like, spending, you know, for a bit.
Yeah, if Putin's walking down LA, I'm like, okay, Navalny, here we go, dude. If it's 500 bucks, I'm like, man, I hope someone shows up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hope someone gives it to him. Yeah, no, dude. Like, but yeah, like,
I had no clue. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of genius, really. Like, dude, like
price him out, man.
Price out your fucking haters,
dude. I'm like, sure that's what Cosby's doing. Lead cannot charge.
But no, like, well, to kind of circle back to the beginning, though, here is, like, talk about NIL deals and stuff, like, or like the transfer portal, all this stuff in college sports, and this whole new corporate culture and stuff. Because you see kids now that come in, like, no, I want the raise, then I'll work harder. It's like, no, that's not how it works. Like, you got to put in the work to get the raise. But, like, what we're seeing is what I call travel ball culture. These travel teams that the kids grow
it's
up on. Where parents have nonstop for most of these athletes and just people in general now, parents have just been hand picking and choosing their spots, trying to deal from the bottom of the deck. And yeah, I get trying to give your kid every advantage possible, but also at the same time, like, fuck, dude, we're all going to have a struggle and you have to face a challenge here and there. And it's how you come back from the challenge that makes you who you are. Like,
you're so right, brother. And that's why the NIL is huge. But also it's that they don't have to sit out a year to transfer. Because you would be shocked, the Gonzaga legends that almost transferred, but you don't want to sit out that year.
Yeah.
And now that they can just not only go anywhere else, but get a higher offer.
Yeah, just play.
Like, I don't know if you've seen, but my favorite Gonzaga player last year was Hunter Salas. And he's now just dominating for Wake Forest.
Yeah.
I think he might sneak into the end of the lottery. He might have stayed at Gonzaga if he didn't have to wait a year, because he would have had a much bigger role this year. He would have been a star for us. The offense would have revolved around him. But instead, I can't blame him. He got a huge pay raise, and he goes to Wake Forest. He's going to be in the NBA next year.
Yeah, and I mean
– but when you had to wait a year, that changed everything, and you had to get in there and get tough. And coaches, I'm sorry. I've had directors that will kind of like, you know, really be tough with me, and I get better.
Yeah.
And it's the same with coaching, man. Like – you know, Coach Few in practices, he's tough.
And
he's old school. And that way now, it's like, I don't want to sit here and get yelled at.
And when the coaches' contracts don't mean shit anymore, with these buyouts just getting paid for by these collectives and stuff, it doesn't really, like, I can't blame the kids. Like, dude, like, hey, man.
We would do the same. Like, hey, I got this guy yelling at me, and this other school's going to just let me be a clown and do whatever. Bye.
I'll go to four schools in 4 years and just take the fucking highest offer each year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? Not realizing if you stay at that one school, you're going to build up your skills.
And you can be.
You do have to get sometimes kind of broken down to get built back up in this life.
Well, and also if you're doing it at the right school, like a school like Gonzaga, where you get to be part of this amazing alumni network. And you're now like family. I don't know. Like, dude, look at like
they play every day with John Stockton.
Bro, look at the
old, every Sunday you play with the greatest NBA point guard ever.
Look at the way Miami Hurricane football players take care of each other.
Oh, big time. Big time. And even more important, it's for the guys that don't go to the next level.
Yeah.
Everybody that plays for Gonzaga stays in Spokane. gets great jobs from alumni, because they also know guys that graduate from Spokane
yep.
have toughness and resilience and brilliance. And if they were able to survive there, that's something. So they all work in the town and do great.
Because I've often told people,
going away.
Like people go, oh, college, you don't need that. I don't learn shit there. I'm like, no, what you're doing is you're proving to someone you can show up for 4 years on time and accomplish tasks.
And you learn social skills.
Yeah. And
I get so proud of the Gonzaga players when I see them, because they make every fan feel like $1 million. You deal with a lot of different kinds of people. That's what a team is you have guys from around the world and you come together for a common goal.
So,
that's
more
valuable than most classes.
I think we're going to see this in the next few years, where like guys are going to realize that you see these guys, there's going to be a shitload of 30 for 30s in a few years about all the guys that chased the bag in the NIL and things didn't quite work out for them, where if they probably would have stayed especially, dude, like if you're Coach Lee, I would probably only transfer, to be honest, if my coach was leaving. Because to me, but at the same time, like the coach wouldn't be the only reason I would sign out of high school. Like to me, it's a combination of the school itself, the program itself, but like, dude, the campus and the campus life. Like,
yeah.
I see why, I hate Alabama football. But fuck, did you see why guys want to go there? That shit's fucking off the hook every Saturday.
Off the hook, and they leave better players than they came in, and they're prepared for the NFL.
Like Georgia.
There's a real interesting quote in the book Fab Five by Mitch Albom, which is one of the great sport books ever. But he's like, the biggest adjustment to colleges is not that guys aren't starting, it's that they're not starring.
Yeah.
And this new NIL way means instead of having to like get your ass kicked and fight your way back, now you don't have to. And I think a lot gets lost there.
Yeah. No, like, look at the just great examples. Look at like those Duke and North Carolina teams of the 80s and 90s, where it's like, yeah, Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Sam Perkins, dude, those guys made each other better in practice.
Every day.
Dude,
every day.
Leitner,
Dean Smith, the only person to hold Jordan under 20. It's the best joke, but it's true.
It's true,
Iron sharpens iron, you're forged in the fire, and these rules, I think, actually aren't the best for the kids.
No, they're not.
They should absolutely be compensated, but, you know, being able to leave after because it's also these parents. The parents are like, why isn't my kid starting?
But it's the travel. Like, dude, okay. Actually, this will be the last thing because I got to tell you this story. Because my nephew's playing like T-ball, but like they don't really play T-ball anymore. They don't really use a T. You know that? They get like four pitches off a pitching machine, and if they don't hit it, make contact or whatever, then they put a T out for one swing. And so it's like, dude, and my brother's telling me a lot of these parents literally think these kids are going to win or lose the scholarship at age 6 or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable the hubris of these people first.
Oh, yeah. And these travel teams.
Yeah.
But the travel teams also really shove a lot of lower income people out.
Well, so these travel teams, what's happening is a lot of kids would do that instead of playing in like your local league with your friends. So what this league my brother's in, like it's like the local pony league in Garden Grove. What they do is they have like a travel elite team for that each age group. So you try out for that. You can make that. But like a lot of the best players choose to just play. They want to play on the team with their friends.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, so my nephew was playing in a fall ball league. And he said there's these insanely toxic parents on this. I mean, keep in mind, this is 6-year-olds, okay? And they would say they didn't play hard enough. They don't deserve a snack after this game, the refreshment or whatever.
Are you kidding?
I shit you not, dude. And so they basically cut out all these toxic parents and kept the cool ones and kind of have a new team for the spring league. And the toxic parents all kind of went and formed their own. They play each other week one of the new season.
Oh, how do we bet on that, Kate? Let's
dude.
Go.
I'm telling
you, let us bet on that.
Don't say that. I got to cut that.
Why?
I'll tell you. I can't say it because if I say it, then I got to cut it again.
Oh, no worries. No worries.
It's just this horror story. So the coach of the old team, or one of the coaches from the old team, that's now coaching this new toxic, team toxic or whatever. he stuck around to watch my brother's team's practice like the other day. He's going to scout six-year-olds, dude.
No. These people are sick.
Dude, I'm these sorry. These people
are blame their high school coach because that's who
that, created I would have been monsters, in the major.
My God.
I would have been Mike Trout if my fucking freshman coach didn't
tell me. Oh, yeah. They always have a bad year. You know how it is, politics. I'm like, the politics of you are dog shit.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me nuts, buddy.
Half the time, and most of the time, too, it's just like they had no heart, no soul.
No,
I want to tell these parents.
Can't teach heart, Bowser.
Most of these kids won't play after age 12. They'll find something else they're more into. And a lot of them, when you get to high school, some of them even that were good at age 14 will hit drugs in high school.
Yeah. Come on.
Sorry. I knew plenty of guys that were fucking studs all through up to high school. And then fucking got into meth or whatever and just fucking flamed out or couldn't make grades to stay on the team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no interest in going to school, no interest doing that. Good at sports, but who fucking cares?
I'll give you a quick one, and then I know we got to go, but that's my theory why Cody Bellinger had difficulty getting a big deal because the guys smoke weed now. Tons of Dodgers, God bless. It's, you know, there are medicinal values to it, but I think these older owners, especially like the Ricketts that run the Cubs, you know, they know Cody is a stoner, but he works so hard, you know, in there, and I think it's just a difference in perception.
I'd rather have a stoner than a drunk. The stoner's not hungover on a morning game.
The drunks, they will happily give a $200 million deal to.
Yeah,
happily.
It's insane.
The stoners, they're like, oh, God. It's like reefer madness.
Oh, God. You're right, dude. I haven't thought about that much. But
No, that's what it is. Because it's well known. And, like, you know, I always ask, like, the chauffeurs or something when I get one of those gigs where they have a car pick you up. I'm like, tell me stories. I'm like, all right, I took the Dodgers. Here's who is. I'm like, whoa, yeah. And, like, I think that's, you know, they totally held it against him. It's too bad.
Jen and I have been watching, like, Real Housewives of Orange County, like, going back and watching it from the beginning.
Oh, I got to watch that one. My wife just got me into L.A. That's the first I got to do
one.
Orange
County. That's the first one. So, I mean.
I got to do Orange County because I have so many I went to so many Ohtani games.
You'll like it because Matt Keogh,
Orange County questions.
Former A's scout Matt Keogh, the early seasons. It's about.
Hold on, what?
Yeah, dude, his wife is one of the housewives in the early seasons. And like,
no.
A big storyline is his son Shane's minor league fucking career.
Oh, done. My wife and I need a new show, too. Bless you.
Watching later, we're in like season 9 now or whatever, but one of the episodes we're watching, girl's like so embarrassed her mom's a stoner. It's like, and then her mom's like in her 60s, 70s, just like some cool, like hippie lady. And it's like, dude, yeah, old people smoke weed, guys. Like, this shouldn't be a fucking shocker. And this episode was from like, I don't know, 2015 or 2014 or whatever. So it's like, dude, when shit's legal, you guys shouldn't be too weirded out. But the funny, okay, and this is what I'll close it on. One of the housewives, for listeners, I want you to like email me at luxoptierpodcast.com at gmail.com. If you watch Real Housewives of Orange County and you want to take a guess, one of the housewives from that show, I used to work at a South Orange County dispensary. One of their sons used to come in there and I recognized him from the show. So I'll tell Eric off the air and you guys take a guess on the air. Okay. I got so many options for music on the way out here. But there's really only one I can use. So, Eric, thank you so much for joining. Anything you want to plug?
You're the best, buddy. This was a joy.
Oh, man. Always a pleasure talking. But
I'll be seeing you in Vegas soon.
Fuck yeah, dude.
We'll go to the Westgate. We're going to get Italian food. It's on. We'll get a good gravy, huh?
Yeah. I got two Italian. I got the fancy Italian spot there, the seafood steakhouse kind of spot. Or I got just the classic deli, like, sit down with checkered tablecloth, you know. Like,
let's go. Done. It's on.
Yeah. But yeah, anything you got to plug coming up? Anything you want?
Nah, I don't think Baby Shark watchers are doing this show. If they are, I congratulate those parents very much.
Yeah, if your kids are into, you know, the show that you do for. But yeah, so yeah, everybody check out Underdog Fantasy. Use promo code LSH. And I'll be giving more info coming up on the benefit thing for my medical expenses for the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And follow us on social media at LuxStopsPod. Make sure you give like a rating, review, Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen. Thank you so much, everybody. God bless you and keep gambling.